Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week we're talking about the season premiere of Game of Thrones and the new Haim album, Something to Tell You.
We've also been to see the RSC play Queen Anne, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Last week, we chatted about Happy Valley, didn't we? And I think you've got an email about that there.
We did indeed. So Sarah Hess, who was one of the people who recommended that we watch it in the first place, who is also a writer for Orange is the New Black, we should say, got in touch to say, "Of course I listened to the latest right away, and I'm so glad you both liked Happy Valley. I think the thing that appeals to me about it most is that you can tell how tightly the actor and writer work together to make that character happen. Anyway, please keep watching. Season 2 is even better. Looking forward to a revisit if you are so inspired."
Oh, I've already finished the first season.
Have you? Oh, I'm so jealous. I haven't had time.
I've powered through it. In fact, boring insight into my life. For the first two episodes, I watched them on my own because I was running out of time for Seriously. And then I wanted my boyfriend to watch the rest with me so much that I watched the first two again with him before I carried on with any of the others.
Wow, that
and
is dedicated.
I think we got through like four in one night and then like two another night. It was really good fun. So I'm just, yeah, keen to start the second season now. I'm so glad to hear that it's as good as the first, because often sophomore seasons can have a bit of a drop-off, can't they? But apparently not so.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Thank you very much to Sarah and everyone else who recommended that. Oh, also last week we explained how I'm shortly moving to Liverpool.
Boo!
And we just had a lovely email from Ella, who I'm not going to read it because it's really, really long, but basically she has sent me loads and loads of recommendations for stuff I can do in Liverpool.
What an angel.
And even offered to be my tour guide,
oh,
if I so wish.
Great.
So thank you so much, Ella, and anyone else who has added me on Twitter with suggestions, which has been very much appreciated.
Oh, you're going to settle right in. So further Seriously event updates, go to seriouslypod.com/events to see them all. We did a Game of Thrones quiz 2 weeks ago? One week ago.
It was literally last week.
Feels
like a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long week in the Game of Thrones fandom. Yeah, last week we did a Game of Thrones quiz at the book club in Shoreditch with a bunch of Game of Thrones nerds. It was great. I actually had a really good time. There was some controversy. They did chant shame, shame, shame at me, but it was just great, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, actually one of my favourite ones we've done.
Yeah.
And they've all been great. But I don't know, just I think everyone was so excited about the new series. Lots of people had brought family members along as well.
Oh, yeah,
as friends.
That was so cute.
It was really, really nice. In fact, we enjoyed it so much that we're going to do another one.
Yes, on the 12th of September 2017, no less, which I think is like a week after the series finishes, maybe, or just after the series finishes. So if you were feeling buzzed at the premiere, hopefully you'll be feeling buzzed at the finale also. Please do grab tickets. I think it will mostly be the same quiz, so if you came to the first one, you'd really easily win, and that wouldn't be fair on others. But we will be doing a new one, and maybe we'll incorporate some new questions from the new series into that too. It's TV only, no books.
Yes, we should have said that for the other one, because a couple of people asked us on the night.
TV only.
Yeah, we're not getting involved in discrepancies between books and TV.
I don't have time for that.
No one has time for that. Apart from a couple of Game of Thrones podcasts I've encountered recently where they devote themselves entirely to the differences between the show and the books.
Caroline is now the world's foremost Game of Thrones podcast expert in additional news. So,
oh yeah, I wrote a piece about it recently. So I listened. There are many of them and I've listened to most of them.
Do get in touch with her with any of your queries about this wide-reaching subject.
Please don't. I have all the information I need.
Lol. Well, rolling on, we are going to do Game of Thrones this week. Yay.
Yay.
So Game of Thrones season 7, can you believe it, began again on Sunday night, beginning where season 6 left off, which was a lot of murder and a lot of death. I keep calling them like literally explosive two episodes that ended season 6, which I think is quite lame. I think a lot of journalists are doing that. So apologies in advance.
Enemies to the east. Enemies to the west. Enemies to the south. Enemies to the north. Whatever stands in our way, we will defeat it. We're the last Lannisters. The last ones you count.
I was born to rule the Seven Kingdoms. And I will.
The King in the North!
Your father and brothers are gone, yet here you stand. Last best hope against the coming storm.
I got up at 2 a.m. to watch this with my boyfriend because we are such massive nerds. I literally went to bed quite early, set the alarm for 1:30, got up, had some chocolate and some fizzy pop, and really enjoyed watching Game of Thrones. He's also recapping Game of Thrones for his place of work. I'm recapping Game of Thrones for my place of work. My life has really come full circle. And yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed the cold open, as we call it in TV world. So before the credits, we started off with Arya Stark basically murdering a bunch of dudes, which is the best, right?
Yeah, that was fantastic. And actually, although I enjoyed the whole episode, this remained my favourite sequence, where she wearing the face of Walder Frey.
I love that they never really fully explain like how the face wearing works, but you just like we always just roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. Wearing the face of Walder Frey. So initially, you don't know that it's her. She's standing in front of a hall of all the Freys and making a big speech about how, you know, you all supported me, you all helped me betray the Starks, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And now I've bought really nice wine for you to enjoy. And they all start drinking it. And then they all start choking. And then they all fall on the floor dead.
Yeah.
And then she pulls her face off and she's like, never forget.
Oh, she has a great line. She says to the Frey women who are sort of notoriously terribly abused, when people ask you what happened here, tell them the North remembers. Mm-hmm. Tell them winter came for House Frey. And you're like, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, it's so good. It's a weird choice of how to start that episode because the penultimate episode of season 6, we saw Arya murder Walder Frey in a way that was, you know, really, or was it the, might have been final. I'm not 100% on that. But in either one of the last two episodes of season 6, yeah, we see her murder Walder Frey in like a really great way. So then to start the new season with like Walder Frey, this is jarring second where you're like, wait, what? And then you're like, oh fuck, I know what must be going on here. And for me, tonally, this episode really belonged to those final episodes of season 6, which were so action heavy, so kind of deliciously vengeful, so many women just like literally murdering everyone in front of them and then like having a mic drop line and walking away. And then the rest of this episode was not so much in that tone, right?
No, there were still women struggling with power and in powerful positions potentially, but no one else had that kind of raw vengeance moment that Arya had. So we saw Sansa at Winterfell with Jon, where she was trying to advise him not to forgive his enemies too easily, and he kind of slapped her down with like, don't undermine me in front of the clansfolk or whatever.
Whose side are you on there?
I'm on Sansa's side.
I think it's really divisive because I'm on Sansa's side, but I think a lot of people are on Jon's side with
one. I can see that because the disagreement between them is that Jon wants to pardon the families who betrayed House Stark because, you know, the people who actually did the betraying died in battle, and, you know, their descendants, if they want to pledge allegiance to him, he'll happily have them and move onward and all the rest of it. Whereas Sansa's very much more of the like, no, they betrayed you, reward the people who were loyal and tell these people to F off.
Yeah. It's difficult though, because I do think, although Sansa has some good points, she's not going about it the way that is going to make Jon listen to her the most. Like, if she wants to kind of take advantage of her position as like brother slash cousin of like the most important person in the North, then I think maybe she could like appeal to him a little bit better. But yeah, I also found John such a hypocrite in that whole scene, because he was really like, no, think of these poor children. We're not going to like punish them for this weird kind of familial deeds. But he literally like hanged a kid last season who was like bullied into joining the like revolt against him and stabbed him. And you're like, John, you like murdered an 8-year-old. Like, what's wrong with that? I just don't get it. He also had like a male feminist moment where he was like, we're going to get the women to fight in our wars, because if only half the population are helping us mine Dragonstone, then we're not going to get very far. And I was like, okay, John, but okay. Like, we'll see. We'll see how this male feminist John turns out. I'm going to just look at you with extreme skepticism for now.
I am interested in, maybe this will come to nothing, but I'm interested in what John's like new sort of non-vengeance based system of politics might mean. That maybe if we are heading for the final battle for Westeros, then it makes sense that the different contenders should have different visions for what Westeros should be like after they've won. And I felt like that whole scene hinted at John going like, I want to move away from this sort of eye for an eye. You murdered my family, so I murder yours. I want to kind of wipe the slate clean, start again. You know, winter is coming. Winter has come. We all have to work together to survive.
And
stop
obviously,
the fighting.
However annoying his obsession with winter is coming, the White Walkers are on their way, is like, obviously it's the only sensible, the only sensible perspective in the entire series to have at this point. It's like, maybe we should worry about death, which is literally coming for us all.
As we saw, scary zombie giants marching.
1-1, so sad. Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, he is maybe right about that.
Yeah. Before we move on from that scene, shout out to Lady Lyanna Mormont of Bear Island, still queen of our hearts, just an icon of our times. I don't plan to be knitting by the fire when the war comes or whatever. Like, great dialogue, love it. And I also really liked Sansa's dialogue with Littlefinger, where she said, no need to seize the last word, Lord Baelish. I'll assume it was something clever. I was like, boom, yes. Though again, you should probably keep buttering that guy up, because you need him.
Yes. People who've dismissed him have historically fallen off high things.
Yeah, he obviously likes her when she's a little bit like sassy though, so maybe he's into that. Should we mention the Ed Sheeran cameo, or should we pretend it never happened? Discuss.
It was really embarrassing.
It was so bad.
I just felt very embarrassed for him.
He just doesn't know how to hold his face normally. I think he's not an actor, bless him.
Also, why didn't he let them like change his appearance in any way?
Because he already looks like a weird like 16th century troll person.
But his hair was all brushed forward in the same way, and I felt like at least Ed, like, get into the spirit, let them like put some mud in your hair and make you look a bit like a Game of Thrones extra. You just look like Ed Sheeran in a cape, which is embarrassing.
But
for
I do think Ed Sheeran's vibe is a bit like mead and stockingsy terrible way.
Yeah, so anyway, glossing over that,
I really did think that Arya was going to kill him and she didn't, and you're like, come on, what are you here for if not that?
Oh, incidentally, I do want to just shout out to one of the Game of Thrones podcasts I listen to, which is called Game of Thrones the Podcast, in which they discussed the Ed Sheeran cameo. But one of them had never heard of Ed Sheeran. That's what the other guy was like.
Are they American? But he's really big in America too.
They're American, but the one guy was like, you can't have not heard his music. It's just not possible. But he kept calling him Ed Sheeran.
Oh, I like that. Sheeran.
Yeah, he's like, is that how you say it? I don't know. I don't know who he is.
I also keep wanting to call him Ed Sheeran. The Sheeran.
But like, what a blessed existence.
I know. Oh, jealous. I also would like to shout out to the poop montage, which was great. Someone on Twitter was like, hey, look, we're all so excited for the Game of Thrones revival. And Game of Thrones, colon, offers you an Ed Sheeran cameo and a long poop montage. You're like, cool.
So this used up most of Samwell Tarly's screen time.
Yeah.
Was watching him scrub bedpans and
Wretch. Repeat.
Slop horrible poo like stew into bowls and then do the whole thing again.
Yeah,
it's very like circle of life in a horrible, horrible way.
I was impressed when he just like accepted a sort of diseased heart and liver into his bare hands as though it was like no big deal though, so like respect.
Yeah, and you know, he's still trying to investigate Dragonglass at the Citadel. Really enjoyed Jim Broadbent in this episode.
Yeah, and we finally got to see who he's playing, because he's another Harry Potter alumnus who has a starring role in Game of Thrones now, and he's playing this maester.
Yeah, and best like dialogue over an autopsy I've seen in a long time.
That's something normally reserved for like police procedurals or silent witness, but it was great.
It was really good. And then we had everyone's favourite Iron Throne occupant, Cersei Lannister. What did you make of her in this?
It's funny because I just, there's so many questions over that plot line because they have no kids anymore. Mm. All their kids have died. They tried to give us some dialogue explaining what Cersei's fighting for now. And I'm not sure I like fully buy what she's fighting for. And I wonder how they're going to resolve that plot line. And Euron Greyjoy said he was going to get her like the ultimate, most priceless gift. And I feel like that's either going to be like Tyrion's head because she wants him dead so much, or like some way of her preserving her bloodline. Yes. And my boyfriend, credit where credit's due, this wasn't actually me. He said he thought maybe there was an implication that she might actually be quite into the idea of the Army of the Dead, because that could be her new legacy.
Yeah, so I was wondering that because, you know, they try to put the exposition in that dialogue between her and Jaime, where Jaime asks that question. And it's like, what are you even doing this for? We're not a dynasty anymore. It's only us left. And I think that she's basically become the political equivalent of a suicide bomber, is that if she's going down, she's taking everything with her. And the White Walkers would fit into that.
She's basically done that sans suicide. Is this just the long game version of that?
But she blew up the Sept of Baelor, like she means it.
Yeah, definitely. We also saw Daenerys finally reach her ancestral seat in a scene that I quite enjoyed. Thought Dragonstone looked really nice.
Yeah,
I'd live there.
I felt like in many ways this episode had something of everything that Game of Thrones has to offer. And it got to like the last 10 minutes and I was like, I haven't seen any nice panning shots of castles yet. What is going on? And then we arrive at Dragonstone, nice panning shots of castles. It looked beautiful. Yeah. It was lovely.
I really appreciated the final line of the episode as well, which was Daenerys saying, "Shall we begin?" over her sort of like big map table thing.
Mm. Well, it's Stannis's big map table thing,
well,
isn't it?
Well, he was like occupying her castle in the rebellion. Yeah, but this episode felt so build-up-y. Mm. There was so much like, I felt like visual mapping. So yeah, we see like the painted table in Dragonstone, also Cersei's big map on the floor, also Sam's map of Dragonstone in his little book, and then like Jon and Sansa are like arguing about the northernmost points in Westeros with their like sort of, I don't know, map in dialogue.
Yeah.
And there's just loads of like, hey everyone, like don't forget, like this is where all the different threats are coming from. These are all the important strongholds. And it's like inviting you to like just get your map ready for the season. And then finally we have Daenerys like stood at the foot of this big map and she's like, right, shall we begin? And you're like, right, okay, now I'm ready for the season.
Yeah, exactly.
I want some action now. Yeah. We kind of got a footnote from the last season at the beginning, loads of exposition, and now hopefully next episode I'm thinking like straight back into the action.
And it did really underline the fact that all the players are on the same continent again now. Mm-hmm. We could actually finally see, because like for instance, Daenerys and Jon have never had a scene together, have they?
No, they've never met.
We could actually see some unlikely meetings. They're going to have to be some alliances.
And are they going to figure out that they're related?
Yeah.
That's the big question, I guess.
The whole thing now has to bring everybody together, and that began by them all like landing on the same continent and moving towards. So yeah, it did feel like geopolitical setup.
Yeah, but I'm excited for what's to come.
Yeah, same here. Now we're going to talk about Haim's second album, Something to Tell You, which has just come out. It's the follow-up to 2013's Days Are Gone, and sees the sisters pursue their particularly Californian style of rock. You're just another recovery.
I guess the kind of like really tired line about Haim is that they're like Fleetwood Mac meets Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
Like this kind of like 70s rock influences meeting that kind of 90s R&B rhythm. But it's kind of like a cliche because it's true and it does sum up their sound quite well. And this album really just builds on their sound from that debut, I think.
Yeah, and I was actually just reading the Pitchfork review of Something to Tell You recounts this anecdote.
Jen Pelly, isn't it? So good.
It was so good, but it recounts that they did seek advice from Stevie Nicks while they were working on this album.
Do you have that review? What's the first line of that review? I just remember thinking like, that is a perfect opening line for a Haim review.
It's Stevie Nicks told Haim to keep diaries.
Oh, doesn't that just, like, go and read her review, it's amazing, but doesn't that just fill you with, like, intrigue about this album?
Yeah, but so what Stevie Nicks was kind of saying to them beyond that keeping a journal is a good practice, especially if you are trying to create something, is look inward, you know, look to your own lives and your own feelings. You don't have to make big statements about the world as it is or as you want it to be. Just express what you feel. And that is what they've tried to do, because I feel like the overwhelming impression I get from this album is one of longing.
Yeah.
And a sort of striving for something.
I think they're really good on like the fundamental complexity and difficulty of like being in a serious relationship with another person. And I remember that one of their first singles started with that line, you know, I'm bad at communication, it's the hardest thing for me to do. That essential problem that I guess is just like part of so much of like music and culture in general, of like, oh, I like love this person, but they're also a bit impenetrable and things are also like really difficult and like conversations aren't always easy and that kind of thing. And I think that really comes across in this album lyrically. I think the lyrics are just very mature and very like insightful about how people relate to one another, essentially.
Yeah, and the music is, I think, more complex than I expected it to be. To be fair, it has been like 4 years since their first album, which I did really like. But my sense impression that Days Are Gone left, and I have to admit I don't listen to it that much anymore, is that it was very upbeat, kind of sunny music.
Yeah.
And the kind of thing that if I still had a car, I would listen to in summer with the windows down, that kind of thing.
Certainly the singles, I think, definitely.
But this album isn't like that. It's a lot darker, in some places a bit more grungy. It has more rhythmic complexity to it. And I really like that they've gone with that.
Yeah, that rhythmic complexity is definitely there. And there are some songs on this that I really like where it surprises you, where they go like in the chorus, a bit like Lord Sober. I was like, ooh, I like this because the rhythms are like very offbeat in the chorus. And there's a lot of that in this album too. But yeah, having said that, I think the standout ones for me are maybe the sunnier, poppier ones.
Yeah, they are still very good at that. There's no question about it.
I really like Little of Your Love and Ready For You. I think I really like how Ready For You is quite like soul-y in parts. And yeah, those are the two that I've like gone back and gone back and gone back and listened to again and again. I don't know why, they just like get something in my head. I really like the lyric from Ready For You that says, they said you'd be like all the other guys, two-faced but too numb to know it, telling your pretty lies. And I'm like, oh, relate. So many men that I know or that my friends date are just these guys who are like, yeah, I'm like not ready for a relationship, and then they're in a relationship with a different woman like 2 weeks later, but they can't even realize that they're doing that. They just aren't emotionally in tune with themselves enough to realize what they're doing. Yeah, I just thought like that suddenly you're like listening to this like quite casual pop song, and then there's like an insight like that, and you're like, whoa.
Yes. Did you listen to their Live Lounge?
I did not listen to their Live Lounge appearance.
I really liked it. As their cover, they did Bad Liar by Selena Gomez.
Oh, great song.
Which is a great song, but also really interestingly covered by like a guitar band.
Because it's so spare, isn't it? That original arrangement. Oh, I'll definitely check that out. But again, I can see why that would appeal to them, because that's got that like late 70s Talking Heads bass line, hasn't it? So it's kind of got that merge of things that they like. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and slightly more spoken vocals in places as well, which they're now experimenting with and stuff. Yeah, overall, it's definitely a really interesting album. I don't know, I'm not sure yet whether it's like fully sunk into my skin in the way that, say, Lord's Melodrama has.
So it's a tough comparison,
isn't
it?
I know, I shouldn't.
We just love Lord, we're just obsessed with Lord.
I shouldn't compare other music to what is clearly going to be like my album of the decade or something.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Walking down the street the other day, trying to distract myself, but then I see your face. Oh wait, that's someone else. Oh, trying to play a coy, trying to make it disappear, but just like the Battle of Troy, there's nothing subtle here. Oh, in my room there's a king-size space, bigger than it used to be. If you want, you can rent that place. Call me an amenity. Even if it's in my dreams, I
So last week, Anna and I went to see a play.
At the theatre.
What
are we like?
It's a departure for us. We went to see the RSC's Queen Anne at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, which we'd been recommended by a member of the publicity team there, who is also a Seriously listener, said that she thought we'd like it. And did we, Anna?
Well, I feel like Seriously listeners should probably know that a historical play is probably not my main bag. And how long was this play? 2 hours 45, maybe?
Something like that. Interval? Yeah.
That's a long play for me. it's a period that I know absolutely nothing about, to the extent that I was like, I don't know what's going to happen in this play. Great. No spoilers. So I really thought that I wasn't going to enjoy it, but I loved it. It went by so quickly, and I just left the theatre thinking like, wow, if this had been a play that I had seen in school, I might have got way more into this sort of period of history and not felt that it was off limits to me in some sort of way.
Mm, yeah, so it covers the like end of the Stuart dynasty, essentially, very late 17th and early 18th century, the accession and then rule of Queen Anne, who was the daughter of James II. And so all the stuff that she faced in her reign was the fact, you know, she was childless. She'd had 17 pregnancies and no living children to show for it.
God, that is just awful.
It's so grim, isn't it? You know, one of her sons lived to be 11 and then died. You know, it was absolutely horrible. So yeah, it covers her kind of succession problems, plus the fact that she's a Protestant, but her father and her half-brother were Catholics and had been ruled out from the throne, and Parliament had passed this thing called the Act of Succession that basically meant no Catholic could ever succeed to the throne. So, you know, there are religious tensions. There are also political tensions, because you've got the beginnings of the kind of Tory Whig fight in Parliament about, you know, statism versus individualism and all this kind of stuff. And in the middle of it all, you've got this woman who has all these health problems, is really underconfident, and just wants her best friend to spend time with her.
Yeah, that's what it's all about for me. If anyone's listening and is like, I don't understand like 40% of the words Caroline just used, that's me. Like, that was me going into this play. But you really get the sense of the personal as well as all those things, which is, you know, the tensions within her court being a lot about Anne's feelings, platonic or otherwise, for Sarah Churchill, who's played by Romola Garai in this excellently. And it becomes like a drama of both like big macro state problems and just like female friendship gone awry problems. And that for me was just so compelling, that combination.
Yeah, because Anne really relies on Sarah, but there's a fundamental power imbalance in their relationship because Anne is the queen and Sarah is her courtier. But then there's also a shift the other way in the sense that Sarah is beautiful and confident and articulate and has a husband with whom she's an intellectual match and they're a great team. Whereas Anne is, I mean, I don't think she is stupid, but she thinks of herself as stupid and slow. And her husband loves her very much, but he's not that smart and she feels quite isolated. So Sarah gets very impatient with Anne all the time. She said, you know, just make decisions, just do things. Like, you know, you just, all you have to do is go there and wear the robe and wear the crown and stand there. Why can't you do it? And Anne's saying, well, you know, because it makes me feel dreadful and I feel dishonest and I don't feel like it's the honest thing to do. And, you know,
the directors and the cast do a really good job of showing you the both sides of the problems in this relationship, because Anne is often very noble's the wrong word, but she's trying to do the right thing almost all the time. She's very needy, but she hasn't really got any like malice in her, but she is very annoying. And when you watch Sarah getting impatient with her, you do get it, because you're like, yeah, well, she is kind of being over the top sorry for herself. She is sort of pretend playing dumb when she knows she does understand this because she doesn't want to do it. At the same time, Sarah has she just has a great line in Indignance, to the point where you're like, okay, calm down. You can't like talk to people like this all the time. You can't be quite this manipulative all the time. So you really, I don't know, it's quite weird to see that friendship from both sides and be in the middle of it and get a really good sense of the push and pull without being like, well, this is the bad one, or without it, I don't know, seeming too, sometimes when friendships fall out on TV, you can just be like, well, why can't they just work it out? And you don't get that sense from this, because you do see how extreme the two different people in it are.
It finishes by you thinking, well, I don't see how that could have gone another way. Like, I don't see how that could have ever come to a happy resolution. So, yeah, I think it was great.
It was amazing. Yeah.
I really liked the sort of musical interludes as well, because part of what comes between Anne and Sarah is this like nascent coffee house culture with pamphlets and balladeers and satire. And so like Jonathan Swift and Daniel Defoe are characters in the play, minor characters.
Because I found some of those references to them a little like too arched eyebrow, but maybe that's because I got those because I know a bit about the literature of the period. There might have been like really like over the top political references that just like passed me by. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, so they would have a little like bawdy song satirizing something in between scenes and things, which
they were very funny.
Yeah, I like that. It was good.
Yeah, and the energy, it just kept the energy going throughout the whole thing, because like I say, it doesn't feel like it's almost 3 hours long at all. It's just really compelling. I couldn't look away.
If listeners are able to get to the theatre to see it, we would recommend it.
So for next week, we're finally going to do something we've been recommended a whole bunch of times, which is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Sarah recommended Brooklyn Nine-Nine to us as well as a bunch of other people, and she singles out a few episodes for us. She says the Halloween and Christmas episodes are really great, but my favourite is the Mumps episode. And we're always one to go on a personal recommendation, aren't we?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to check out the Mumps episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I might have to do a little Google to find out what it's called.
But to find out when and where that is. But yeah, if you want to watch along with us, that's what we're doing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, where you could also leave us a review if you like.
We've got loads of events coming up this summer, including festivals, live episodes and quizzes. Find out more and buy tickets at seriouslypod.com/events.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us at seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.